AI PCs built for business with Intel Core Ultra processors and Intel vPro are optimized for hundreds of AI apps and tools to boost user productivity, collaboration, and creativity. No product can be absolutely secure. Learn more at intel.com/itheroes.
U.S. health insurance costs are set for their biggest surge in years. Plus, we'll check in on oil markets after the Biden administration moves to limit drilling in Alaska, and how trouble in commercial real estate could threaten America's banks.
In the decade after the financial crisis, all these small and regional banks across the country became big-time lenders, really increasing their exposure to commercial real estate. And now that's become a huge risk for them because the market is in freefall.
It's Thursday, September 7th. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The cost of health insurance in the United States is on pace for its biggest jump in more than a decade, with a 6.5% surge in costs in store for employer-based coverage in 2024. That is according to data from consultants Mercer and Willis Towers Watson, which was supplied exclusively to the journal. People with Affordable Care Act plans are also expected to see a 6% premium jump, according to health research nonprofit KFF. Journal health insurance reporter Anna Wilde Matthews says rising labor costs and heavy demand for new and expensive drugs is largely to blame.
In particular, the diabetes and weight loss drugs, Ozempic, Mounjaro, Wegovy, use of those is increasing. And also, if the drug is effective, a patient will often need to keep taking it, perhaps indefinitely, which can raise the costs quite a bit.
And though Anna told us that many workers will end up paying more for coverage out of their paychecks, with insurance costs already among the biggest expenses for families, businesses may take on a lion's share of the increase.
There is some feeling among a lot of employers that they may have gone almost as far as they can go in some cases with these deductibles, and that their employees really are feeling just too much of a pinch. Another thing feeding into that is that we do still have some tightness in the labor market, and certainly in certain sectors, and employers are reluctant to make their benefits package look less attractive than others that they may be competing with for employees.
The Biden administration has proposed blocking new oil and gas leasing on more than 40% of Alaska's National Petroleum Reserve and canceling all remaining leases in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge that have been issued under President Trump. That comes as politicians grapple with how to balance climate concerns against high prices. The reporter Joe Wallace told us the Interior Department proposal isn't moving markets yet.
For the oil market, there are more immediate forces at play. Prices broadly have been rising, as listeners will know from filling up their tanks recently. That's primarily a result of output cuts by the OPEC Plus alliance, export cuts by Russia, which is part of that alliance. Prices, though, are down a bit today in the crude market. It's a sign that although the US economy really is motoring, not all corners of the world economy are out of the woods. There's some concern among traders that economies are coming under pressure and that could start to weigh on demand in the months ahead.
Well, one such factor that could weaken energy demand is a further decline in China's once reliable growth engine. The country today reported a 7.3% drop in August imports compared to a year earlier, marking the 11th drop in the past 12 months. That is an outgrowth of a property crisis that has curbed demand for commodities like iron. Chinese exports also fell for a fourth consecutive month, in a sign that an export-driven recovery likely remains a distant prospect. To the tech world now, where Apple's stock has slipped further in pre-market trading after Huawei launched a new phone with 5G-like speeds and capabilities in China. The launch poses a direct threat to Apple's sales in one of its biggest markets and has exacerbated a decline in its shares that began after the journal yesterday reported that China had banned government officials from using iPhones. The initial batch of Huawei's phone was priced at $960 for pre-sale and sold out within hours. Apple's iPhone 15, meanwhile, is set to launch next week, with the company expected to raise prices by $100 on some premium models. Coming up, the commercial real estate market has fallen on hard times, and according to a new journal analysis, that could spell trouble for American banks, whose exposure to the sector now totals about 20% of deposits. We've got that story and much more after the break.
AI may be the most important new computer technology ever, but AI needs a lot of processing speed, and that gets expensive fast. Upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/wallstreet. Oracle.com/wallstreet.
There is a meltdown underway in the commercial real estate sector. And while most of our focus has been on cities like New York and San Francisco, where developers and building owners are being rocked by high vacancies and rising interest rates, the journals Shane Shiflett and Conrad Putzier report that this story is a lot bigger than it first appears, and with consequences that could ripple far beyond big cities and their tallest office towers. And Conrad joins us now with more. Conrad, break down the situation for us that led you and Shane to write one of the gloomiest article titles that I've read in the journal this year, Real Estate Doom Loop Threatens America's Banks. What's going on here?
So this has been a big topic for the last couple of months, the exposure of banks, especially regional and smaller banks, to commercial real estate. Depositors are concerned about this. Shareholders are concerned about this. Analysts are concerned about this. And what my colleague Shane Shiflett did was basically looked at how exposed these banks actually are to the commercial real estate sector, which has all sorts of issues with rising vacancies, falling property values. And what Shane found in his analysis is essentially that all these banks are way more exposed to commercial real estate than most people know, because they don't just issue mortgages, which is the obvious part. They also do all sorts of indirect real estate lending. And if you add all that together, you basically end up with $3.6 trillion worth of exposure to commercial real estate of banks, which is a huge, huge sum.
A huge sum, and one that's been built up so fast, and it seems like without precedent, that we don't really know what happens next if there is a downturn of this magnitude, right?
Yeah. So part of the issue here is because the exposure of banks to commercial real estate is so much bigger than it seems, in return, that means commercial real estate also depends on bank lending way more than we think. Because if you think about it, right, getting a mortgage from a bank is just one option for a landlord. They can also get a loan from a private equity fund, or they can get a bond financing as an alternative to a mortgage. But what we found is that often, ultimately, the money still comes from banks. So what that basically means is that the vast majority of commercial real estate depends on bank financing. And if banks pull back, that could have disastrous consequences for the market.
You still said if there. How far into this doom loop are we? Is this actually occurring or still a bit hypothetical?
It's early days, and we don't know for sure if it's going to happen, right? So banks are certainly starting to pull back right now. They are essentially not lending against office buildings anymore, with some exceptions. They are lending less against construction projects, less against apartment buildings, less against hotels. And that is having a real impact already. That is already leading to more defaults. But we don't know how far this is going to go and how long it's going to last. There is an optimistic scenario where interest rates go down again, or there's some sort of action from regulators to help banks here, and it all goes back to normal. But there is a real risk that we're at the beginning of this doom loop, where basically banks pull back. That hits the real estate market, forcing banks to pull back even more, hitting the real estate market more, and so on.
And Main Street USA, in some way, just given some of the banks you've profiled here, like banks in Arkansas that have funded properties in Miami and Manhattan.
Yeah, that's the fascinating part about this. It's not JP Morgan and Wells Fargo so much that we're talking about here. It's regional banks from places like Arkansas and California and Texas and often small towns. And what happened after the great financial crisis is that some of the bigger banks basically pulled back from real estate. And so what happened in the decade after the financial crisis is that all these small and regional banks across the country, became big-time lenders, funding high-rise luxury construction projects in cities like New York and Miami, and really, really increasing their exposure to commercial real estate. And now that's become a huge risk for them because the market is in freefall.
I mean, if things melt down further, Conrad, what can be done?
So if regulators want to prevent this doom loop, they face a real challenge here. And the challenge is that interest rates are so high right now, which is a huge issue. The landlord might not be able to afford the mortgage payments anymore because they're so expensive now. And for the government, this basically means they have to, if they want to stop this, if this becomes a real issue, they're going to have to come up with more radical solutions, whether it's a bad bank that just sort of pools all these bad real estate loans and makes them the responsibility of the government, or some other way, it would have to be something more significant.
And no less than roughly $900 billion in commercial property loans maturing this year and next. Obviously, a very large immediate problem on our hands here, and yet specifically finding political consensus around how to respond, that can't be easy.
No, this is an incredibly politically fraught topic. Bailing out banks is very controversial. Bailing out anyone really is controversial. But bailing out landlords, or even giving the impression that you're bailing out landlords, is incredibly politically difficult. And if the government basically goes along and says, hey, we're going to create this huge rescue package for commercial mortgages, even if it's directed at banks, people will rightly perceive it as also helping landlords and helping the real estate market. And whether that's good politics and whether politicians will be willing to do that, that remains to be seen.
That was Wall Street Journal commercial real estate reporter Conrad Pootsier. Conrad, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
We are exclusively reporting that WestRock and Smurfit Kappa are nearing a merger deal which would create a global paper and packaging powerhouse worth some $20 billion. Smurfit Kappa said the discussions involved the creation of a new company called Smurfit WestRock, adding that WestRock shareholders would receive shares in the combined group. The company didn't provide any financial details about the potential merger. According to people familiar with the matter, a deal could be announced next week, assuming the talks don't fall apart. The next president of Mexico will be a woman. In a historic first, two women will compete for the office in elections next year after Claudia Sheinbaum, the former Mexico City mayor and an ally of nationalist president Andrés Manuel López Obrador, won a series of internal polls to become her party's candidate. She will face off next June against Xochitl Galvez, who will lead a coalition of opposition parties. Meanwhile, Mexico's Supreme Court has decriminalized abortion and ordered federal government hospitals to provide the procedure in a major step in the conservative and majority Catholic country. Wednesday's ruling comes after several Latin American countries have fully legalized abortion in recent years, including Argentina, Uruguay, Cuba, and Guyana. However, some campaigners, like the director of the Association for the Rights of the Conceived, Irma Barrientos, said the issue isn't settled.
We will continue to lobby. Let's remember what happened in the United States. After 40 years, the Supreme Court reversed its abortion decision. And we're not going to stop until Mexico guarantees the right to life from the moment of conception.
And a federal judge has ruled that the state of Texas must remove a 1,000-foot-long floating border barrier that it installed in the middle of the Rio Grande. Texas originally installed the buoys as part of a continuing campaign to fight illegal immigration. However, a judge found that the barrier violates the Federal Rivers and Harbors Act by creating an obstruction in the river that makes it impossible to navigate. However, lawyers for Texas said the barrier doesn't decrease the ability to navigate that portion of the Rio Grande. And finally, Meta, PayPal, and X are all companies that have made attempts at building a so-called super app in the United States following the success of WeChat in China, though they've struggled to combine functions like social media, messaging, and payment into one place. Our colleagues on the Journal Video team spoke to Amy Webb, the CEO of the Future Today Institute, about why the U.S. doesn't have a super app yet, despite the clear upside for businesses that can profit on data gathering.
We're not really used to using one app for everything. And that's why when companies like Facebook in the past have tried to launch singular apps that do more than one thing at a time, consumers have largely rejected them. A lot of people distrust the big tech companies, and the idea of a single tech company offering us an app that really houses so many different things, from online payments to bill management to health records, is kind of scary to people. I don't think at this point technology companies are interested in making it look like that they are consolidating their control over our digital lives any more than they already have. I mean, that would just invite regulatory scrutiny.
And to learn more from Amy Webb about how super apps work, check out the video on WSJ.com. And that is What's News for Thursday morning. Today's show was produced by Mohsen Ali and Kate Bullivant. Our supervising producer is Sandra Kilhoff, and I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. We will be back tonight with a new show. Until then, thanks for listening.
ServiceNow is the intelligent platform that puts AI to work for people across every corner of your business, all in a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow.